Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could.
Yep.
To see the
Welcome to Shrink Wrap, the talk show that helps you unwrap the issues blocking your road to a happy and fulfilling life. I'm licensed marriage and family therapist Phyllis Chase, and we're here on KCSN 88.5 FM, Arts and Roots Radio, and we're here every Tuesday evening at drive time. Stay tuned to Shrink Wrap because it's really all about tuning into you. Tonight, we're talking with Dr. Jen Berman, author of the Los Angeles Times bestselling book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. Dr. Jen also writes a monthly parenting column for Los Angeles Family Magazine, and you've probably seen her on Oprah or The Today Show, where she's regularly appearing. Jen is back with us again. We're so happy to have her here because she's got a busy private practice here in Beverly Hills, and she's also raising twins. So thanks again for being here, Jen.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's get right at it. I mean, we've got the A to Z guide here, and maybe we're going to get through the entire alphabet.
We can give it a shot.
But first, tell about everybody why you wrote this book. You know, what prompted you?
I wrote this book because I looked at all the books that were out there as a therapist and as a parent, and I found that there wasn't the book that I was looking for in existence. And I wanted a book where I could pick up a chapter about a specific topic, read it, like have it be a couple pages and be done with it and put it down, because I felt like parents are so busy today, they don't often have time to read a book cover to cover. And I really looked at what are the issues that come up most frequently in my private practice, in my column when people write me and ask me questions, when I travel the country doing television radio, I get a lot of email and letters saying with questions about things. So I looked at one for each letter of the alphabet, what are the 26 biggest issues that people ask me about and that parents really need to know about. And I tried to really summarize the research on the various different issues, but make it really fun. I want to include vignettes from my client experience, from my own experience, from friends' experience. So I want to be fun and light and readable and have a lot of sidebars and vignettes and charts and graphs and all that kind of stuff.
So it's really easy to
access. Yeah, I just want it to be easy and fun, but really informative. And I hope that's what I've accomplished in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids.
Well, I think you have. So what is there one question that people that you get like all the time that stands out more than any other question?
You know, I get a lot of questions that usually what's behind it is a parent who hasn't made consistent boundaries. Why does my kid melt down when we take him out to dinner? Why does, how come when I tell my child to do ABC, they get so angry? You know, a lot of it is that raising kids is really difficult, and we want them to, you know, at some level, we kind of want them to be Stepford children, where we say like, oh, you know, if you don't throw the ball in the house, and they go, okay, mommy, I won't throw the ball in the house. But kids are always testing us, and they're always looking to see, do we care enough to set limits? And as much as kids will kick and scream and say they want to do whatever they want to do, kids really want to know their parents care enough to set limits. And believe it or not, I've actually had children, and you probably have too, in my therapy practice, who've said, I wish my parents cared enough to make that limit. You know, my mom said I couldn't do A, B, and C, and then when I asked her again, she let me do it. And yeah, I really wanted to do that, but I wanted to know she cared enough to follow through with what she said.
Mm-hmm. To say no. I mean, I think that comes up a lot when, you know, they're teenagers and people look back and wish their parents had said, no, you can't stay out past 11 or something.
Sure, or no, you can't go to that person's house or that concert or whatever it is.
Yeah, but that kind of behavior, the parent being that permissive, gets set up so early on.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that you address in your book about setting boundaries.
Very much so. And I think that, and I'm sure every generation has said this, but it's never been more difficult to be a parent. It is just...
Why is that?
It's never been more difficult because the influences of media and the access that kids have to the world and that the world has to our kids is frightening. I mean, it's really, when our kids are on the internet, pedophiles have access to them, creepy people have access to them, other kids have access to them that wouldn't normally. And And most parents don't realize the magnitude and the level of danger that is out there. And I hate to sound so cautionary and to instill fear in parents, but I think that a lot of parents don't realize. A lot of parents say, well, all kids have a computer in their room. All kids have a TV in their room. But that's not what's in kids' best interest. Just because other people do it doesn't mean it's the right thing for your child.
Mm-hmm. So stand up to your values and make sure.
Yeah, stand up for your values. And also, and it's hard as a parent, I know from experience, don't take the easy way out. Every day I really struggle to do what's right for my kid instead of take the easy way out, because there are always choices as a parent where it's much easier to just say, oh, here, have that toy I said you couldn't play with, you know, just so that I don't have to hear you cry. Or, okay, fine, turn on the TV, even though we said we don't watch more than X number of hours of TV. But what I really encourage parents to do is to not do that, to take the harder way out, to sit down with your family, to spend time with them, to have more face-to-face time, because that's really what kids need.
Yeah. Well, I know that we've had Daniel Siegel on the show, and he was saying one of the things about parenting is that the parent really needs to have an awareness of their own emotional life.
Yes.
So that they can tolerate the toughness.
Yes.
That they need to tolerate their children's unhappiness.
And also, if a parent has done the work on themselves, they are less likely to seek out their child's approval and be afraid to make those boundaries. Mm. And that's really important. If you've got self-esteem, if you have worked through your issues with your parents, you're not looking to have your kids adore you 24 hours a day. Because, by the way, it's not going to happen. If you are a parent who's setting boundaries, which you need to be and your kid needs to be, your kids aren't going to love you and think fond thoughts of you 24/7.
Right.
They're just not.
So it's really okay if your child is fighting against you, and that you're
it's necessary
yeah. Because that's how they get their self-advocacy.
Their job is to test us, and our job is to be consistent. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the hardest parts about being a parent, you know, to look at your kid's sweet face and to have to say no is really hard.
Mm.
And a lot of parents these days are choosing the easy way out because it's just easier to not have to see one more tantrum.
Right. But so a parent should be telling themselves that I'm doing the best when my child is tantruming.
Yeah.
And fighting against me to feel their own power,
mm-hmm.
that I need to hold
the
limit.
Yeah, and also I'm keeping my kids safe. If you know you're doing the right thing for your child, then like we talked about it in another show we did together, it's okay for your child to be angry. It's okay for your child to be sad. And you have to tolerate the whole range of emotions that your child feels.
Yes, yes. Well, let's talk about, I mean, here we are sort of talking about the fear of parents.
Sure.
But a lot of children have a lot of irrational kinds of fears. So
sure.
I want to address those and also how a parent's own fearfulness might influence
sure.
the children.
In the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, the B chapter, B is for Boogeyman. I have a whole chart that shows every different age and what the fears are that you can expect your child to have, because there are certain developmental fears and most parents don't realize that. And that was the inspiration for the book, was that I kept getting parents saying, like, why is my kid afraid of the dark? Like, what kind of wimp is he? You know, like, what's going on? Why is she afraid of going down the slide? I don't understand. What's the big deal? But there are certain fears that we can expect at certain ages. And Barry Brazelton, who was a very well-known pediatrician, talked about touch points, and that a lot of the time when children reach a developmental turning point, that it can bring up fears. For example, with younger children, when a child learns to walk, even though it's really exciting and wonderful for a child to be able to walk, a lot of the time it brings up anxiety for the child, because all of a sudden they realize, I'm separate from mommy and daddy, I could get lost, I can fall down. And it's not uncommon at that period of time for the child to have trouble sleeping, for the child to be more clingy, for other things to come up. And if a parent knows that, they can normalize it, and it can take away some of their fears and worries as a parent, because they're able to go, oh, that's normal.
That's
yeah.
Good.
I mean, and you know, one other thing, we talked before about television, and television, I consider turning off the television to be nightmare prevention, because a lot of children, especially at certain ages in that kind of 6 to 10 kind of age group, there are things on television that they can see that really that are so scary for them. And it isn't just fictional television. You know, since 9/11, as parents, we have to be so aware that at any moment there could be a news flash of some terrorist act, some horrible car chase that's live on television and someone gets hit. Mm-hmm. There are things that our kids are exposed to because of the technology we have today that we don't want them exposed to.
Sure.
And we need to really monitor that a lot closer as parents.
Yeah. So you say just no television, you know, close to bedtime at all. I mean, you talk about some other sleeping thieves.
Yeah, well, a lot of the sleep thieves, what I refer to as sleep thieves, are things that we do for our kids or allow our kids to do usually prior to going to sleep, that prevent them from sleeping that we don't realize. And they're simple things like giving our child something with caffeine in it. Well, who hasn't given their child a hot chocolate or a piece of candy at the end of dinner without realizing that there's caffeine in that? There's caffeine in chocolate. There's caffeine in soft drinks. There's caffeine in a lot of the products that kids eat and drink. And you really want to make sure that you're not giving that to your child. Also, television. Television right before bed can get a kid amped up. They can see things like the news that make them scared and give them nightmares that prevent them from sleeping.
Commercials that are funny might scare
Absolutely.
A child, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, you know, it's important that kids have consistent bedtimes, because when kids have consistent bedtimes, it helps their circadian rhythm. It helps them, their bodies then become programmed to go to sleep at a certain time and wake up at a certain time, and they get better rest. When kids stay up too late, most parents don't realize this, and this is really important for parents. If your kid stays up too late, their body releases something called cortisol. Mm. Cortisol prevents them from going to sleep. When you have an 8 o'clock bedtime and then you let your child stay up till 9 o'clock and they're running around the house like a lunatic and you're going, why is this kid so hyper? You've missed the window of opportunity. It means that when your kid gets hyper like that late at night, it's a sign that they are overtired and their body's releasing cortisol.
Which is the stress hormone.
Exactly. Right? And you want to make sure that you're getting your kids to sleep earlier.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. That's what it's the cortisol that's making them hyper.
It makes
when
it much harder for them to go to sleep. It's just so difficult. Once a child's body releases that, you're really fighting uphill. You are bummed out.
I mean, is there something you can do? Because sometimes, like, you're traveling or whatever, and you can't help. You can't stick to a routine. So in that event, what do you do?
You do the best
chamomile
that you can.
Chamomile tea?
Chamomile is actually really great for kids. It's soothing, and it actually can help aid in sleep. But you really, like, even if you're traveling, you want to, and we've talked about revolving things around a kid, do you or don't you? But if you're traveling, you want to work your travel schedule as best as you can around your kid's nap time and sleep time so that you're not landing at 10 o'clock at night and dragging your kid through the airport or through customs or whatever it is and keeping them awake. You're better off trying to plan trips around your child's sleeping and waking schedule.
Okay. Now, a lot of children don't like to go to sleep, and that's a big, I hear that from parents, that they have trouble getting, you know, it's an hour process to try to get their child to sleep.
Well, it is important
to
have a wind down process, to have a 30-minute ritual, whether it is bath, bedtime story, prayers, whatever the combination is of things, brushing teeth, that signals to them it's time to wind down. Because if you do that every night, they start to really understand, okay, it's coming. And as a parent, you also want to have that boundary of, you know, you need to stay in your bed. And one of the biggest mistakes I see parents make, and we've talked about this before, is letting their kids come into their bed. I have a girlfriend who let her child, her young baby, come into her bed. And it wasn't a conscious choice. It's one thing when you say, we're going to do the family bed. We're going to do co-sleeping. This is what we believe in. It's another thing when you have a crying child who can't sleep and you invite them into your bed. Her child was 5.5 years old. She was having her second and couldn't get the first one out of bed. I'm not sure how the second was conceived, but she couldn't get the first one out of bed because she hadn't made the boundary and didn't. At that point, her child was old enough to get out of her bed and climb into mom and dad's bed. And it's much harder when they're older. You want to make sure you start the right habits when they're really young.
Sure. Oh, we're talking with Dr. Jen Berman. She is the author of the best-selling book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. And this is Shrink Wrap, and I'm marriage and family therapist Phyllis Chase, and you're tuned to KCSN 88.5 FM. We were named Best of LA by Los Angeles Magazine. So these children that are in their parents' bed and you can't get them out, so you're saying you've got to set the boundary early on.
Yes.
get those kids to bed.
Yeah.
Hold it, even if the child is really testing your limits.
Yep.
And jumping out of bed, you just put them back
in
bed.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a child who is in that, when you've gotten to that situation where it's gone too far and you have your five-year-old who's in your bed every night, then you have to take kind of other action. What you need to do, what I usually recommend is you explain to your child, Daddy and I or Mommy and I have really thought about it and we've decided that it's, that everyone needs to sleep in their own bed, that you have a bed, Mommy and Daddy have a bed, and that it's time for you to start sleeping in your bed. And we want to help you do that because we feel that that's something that's really important for you and for your well-being. From now on, you're going to sleep in your bed and we're going to do our best to help you do that. Then you bring your child, you start creating a nighty-night ritual, a nighttime ritual where you do all of these things that signal it's time to wind down, time to go to sleep. And then start out by sleeping on the floor in that child's room.
Hmm.
Not in the bed with them, on the floor nearby.
Okay, why do you make that distinction?
Because if you're in bed with them, then they're not learning to sleep by themselves.
Okay.
And it's not the message you want to send to them. The message you want to send to them is you're really capable of sleeping alone in your own bed.
And that's a sign that you're a big girl or a big boy or something?
You want to be careful not to say, like, you're a big girl now, so you can sleep in your own bed. Because then you're going to have a child who regresses who says, well, I don't want to be a big girl. So maybe if I pee in my underwear, you can put a diaper back on me. I can be baby and I don't have to sleep in my own bed aloud. You know?
There you go.
So, and then what you want to do is very, like, each night, it's going to take weeks and weeks. If you have a five-year-old who's been sleeping in your bed, you want to sleep on the floor in that room with her. And gradually, you want to move away from the bed farther and farther. And then eventually, you will be heading towards your room. But, like, you literally want to start off sleeping near them, sleeping a foot away from them, 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, and farther away. What you don't want to do, and a lot of parents make the mistake, is in the middle of the night, get up and leave.
Right.
Unless you tell your child, I'm going to start out sleeping here till you fall asleep, then mommy's going to go to her room and sleep with papa because mommy's and daddy sleep in their bed. But you want to make it a gradual process.
Sure, because you don't want the child to wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, they're gone, and freak out.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Not only that, but also it creates a lot of anxiety because you want your child to feel safe and like they can count on you to keep your word. Mm-hmm. That if you say, I'm going to sleep here in your room, that they know they can count on you to do that. That creates a sense of safety and security, which is really good for kids.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's the same thing with sneaking out when you go to work. A lot of parents, especially with younger children, sneak out because they don't want to see the meltdown. But that's not in your child's best interest. Then your child feels like they could be abandoned at any minute. They don't understand time. They don't understand what's going on. So your best bet is always, even if it means them crying and being upset, is going to your child and say, I love you. Mommy needs to go to work. And if they're crying, say, I know it's really hard for you when mommy leaves for work, but I'll be back. I'll be back at 5 o'clock. Even if they don't understand what 5 o'clock is,
sure.
I'll be back tonight and we'll read a story together and I'm looking forward to it and I love you.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, what about the monsters under the bed, those kind of fears?
Well, those are really common. I mean, they're very, very common, and parents don't need to worry about them. They don't need to worry that their children are have anxiety disorders or anything like that. As long as your child's able to function and do okay, it's really common to have monster fears. You know, it's also very much an understanding I'm separate, you're separate, and there are things in the world that are dangerous, which tends to happen in that early childhood period, you know, mm-hmm. where kids start to realize that the world is kind of scary. And it usually starts out with monsters. And then in this day and age, when kids get a little older, it starts to be like, I worry that someone's going to break into the house. I worry that mommy's going to die. I worry that daddy's going to have a heart attack because they've seen something on TV or they've heard something among their peers.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just curious, you know, here the book is called The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. How important is it to, you know, what I mean, is confidence? How do you instill confidence and how important is it? I mean, is that the goal? Is happy the goal or is both, you know?
Well, to me, confidence, it's a great question. To me, confidence is the link to happiness. I think it's hard to be happy beyond superficially without confidence. And as parents, we all want our kids to have a level of self-esteem and confidence that does lead to happiness. And that usually comes from a much deeper level of self-esteem. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter on self-esteem where I talk about what parents can do and how parents can parent and talk to their children in ways that help promote self-esteem.
Okay. So can you just name like one thing that someone could do at a certain age or maybe because I'm sure it's very age related.
But in the big picture, we all want to feel heard and understood. You know, it's like in that book, A Stranger from a Strange Land, they talk about grokking each other. And I love that word grok because, you know, in A Stranger in a Strange Land, grok meant to like fully understand someone, to really get in their head, to get what they're about. And as parents, that's the greatest gift we can give our kids. And it's harder than it sounds to really listen to our kids because we project, we make assumptions, we try to fix it. And the more we can pull all of that stuff out and really just listen, you know, you have a kid who is having a fight with someone at school, and it's very easy to not hear what they're saying because as a parent, you're like, I want to kill that kid. Right. Like, how could they speak to you that way? And, you know, well, you know, this is what you need to do. But instead, we're better off really listening and really hearing what our kid's struggle is because it may not be what we think it is because our child may share about the fight and we may be thinking, I can't believe that she pushed you down and you scraped your arm. You must be hurting. And it's about the wound on your arm where it was really about, I really wanted her to be my friend and I don't understand why she doesn't want to be my friend or hurts my feelings. And so as parents, we really have to listen very carefully and very closely so we can really understand our kids and our kids can feel understood because that's the greatest gift. When we care enough from our kids' perspective, when we care enough to get to know them and to really listen to them, that's part of the foundation of self-esteem.
And that's certainly respecting them for their own personality, their own character, and their own experience.
Yep. And by the way, it doesn't cost a dime.
Hello. No, we don't even have to think to say anything.
We can
just quietly listen. I mean, I've heard that you know many times to just really not even interrupt your child when you have them in the car and you're coming back from school to just ask how the day was or something specific.
And also, you know, to ask our kids' opinions because that shows that we value their opinions, that we value them. And that's a really important thing to do. Once again, we don't want our kids to be making all our major household decisions. There was an interesting article in I believe it was the Los Angeles Times, about how kids are now how parents are going to their kids for big decisions. And it gave an example of a woman who went to her son who asked, should we move to this neighborhood or that neighborhood? And which mortgage do you think that we should do?
I just
thought, oh my God, that poor kid who has way too much power. That's not good for self-esteem when kids feel like they are the decision makers in the family.
Overwhelming. They're not equipped and they know it.
Yep.
So
and that's
it creates
scary.
A
that's
lot
like
of anxiety.
Free falling.
Sure.
Yeah. No one's home.
No one's home. Yeah, really. Help. So let's talk about, now we're talking about school-age children. You know, two things I think that are the big stumbling blocks is homework. That's often a place where parent and child battle.
Sure.
Let's talk about that first. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have to say that in this day and age, there's way too much homework in the schools. I mean, it's really, it's outrageous. I just talked to someone yesterday who has a child in second grade who is getting 2 hours of homework a night.
Whoa. So I mean, is like fear-based about moving on to college already
second
grade?
And also, I mean, they're talking a lot about how kindergarten now is like first grade, and a lot of parents are holding their kids back and starting them a little later because developmentally, it's a lot of kids just aren't ready for what they're being given. So I think as parents, we really have to be aware of that and that our kids are under so much more pressure than we ever were in elementary school, even in high school. It's a tough time right now.
Mm.
It really is.
What can we do to support them?
Well, what we can do is to make sure that they have what they need. What we can do is to make sure that they have a quiet space to study. We can make sure that we don't have a TV in a room where they're expected to do homework. And, you know, it's like giving kid, you know, candy and then saying, like, sorry, you can't have it. That they have a quiet space to study, that they have all of the supplies that they need, that if they need a tutor, that we do our best to provide that for them or to get whatever kind of help that we can afford to get, that we are available and that they know that we are a resource and that we help them with their homework when they need it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I think that's good advice. What there's so much controversy right now about the parents on the sports field, on the soccer field or whatever. What advice? That's C for is for cheering, but not for pushing and
exactly. And it's, you know, parents have become very competitive with one another and kids are competitive with each other, and sports have become very high pressure at way too young of an age. And I've seen it from all sides. In addition to my own experience, I was an elite level athlete. I was on the national team for about 5 years, and I performed in the 84 Olympics for rhythmic gymnastics as exhibition.
Incredible. Congratulations.
And when I was, thank you, when I was in graduate school on the side, part of how I earned money was I coached gymnastics. And while I was coaching, I also started my sports psychology business, and I started using sports psych with the kids. So I got to travel with the kids. And later on, I also was a judge in rhythmic gymnastics. So I've seen this from all ends.
Yeah.
And one of the things I used to say as a coach to parents a lot is, you need to pull back, because I can't push hard as a coach if you're pushing hard as a parent. You got to give me the room to push so that you can be, I need for you to be that safe place that they come home to and say, oh, I can't believe how difficult my coach was. She really pushed me so hard. That really sucked. Mm-hmm. And you can be the parent who says, wow, that sounds really tough, as opposed to, well, you need to work harder, or, you know, let's start practicing in the backyard. And I think that parents today put too much pressure on their kids. And I have a whole list of things that parents can do in my book, The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids. I have a list of things that parents can do, ranging from how you cheer at a sports game and the things that you shouldn't say, to how you can talk to the coach and help make open communication between kids and coaches, and all kinds of things that parents can do.
That sounds like important and invaluable. I love the way you've seen all sides of it as well.
And it ain't pretty.
It doesn't seem so. I mean, would you, I mean, looking back from your own experience, do you think it helped you as an adult to have that experience of gymnastics? Because it's so tough. I mean, there's the body image thing going on and the competition and perfectionism. There's a lot of things to overcome.
It did both. It has been my greatest asset and my greatest liability. It's been my greatest asset in that it very much formed who I am, because sports, when they are done well and when they're done in a good atmosphere, creates self-esteem, self-efficacy, discipline. I mean, that is something that I really learned from sports. I was really able to become a more organized, competitive, disciplined kind of person. And I don't think I would be who I am or as successful as I am today had I not had that experience. On the flip side, the body image pressure, the pressure to compete. I mean, I really went, by the time I retired at 16, I felt like I was 86 instead of 16.
And you just said retired.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done a whole.
from all the pressure that I had gotten, and you know, that was really tough. On the flip side, I also had experiences that other kids my age never had. I went to Bulgaria to compete. I traveled the world. I was mobbed for autographs in Spain for world championships. So it was really, I got these incredible experiences, but the flip side of it was the pressure was immense.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, here we've been talking about all the fears in the world today, you know, in the home and all this. How important is good old family dinner, traditional family dinner?
I'm so glad you bring it up. And in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, I have a whole chapter on this. And people have kind of been like, a chapter on dinner? Like, dinner. Like, you put it on the plate and, you know, you're done. But what studies have shown is that families are not having dinner together. And when you look at the research, having dinner together is the one thing that you can do that reduces drug use in kids, cigarette smoking, improves grades, reduces eating disorders, reduces cheating, reduces steroid use in boys. I mean, it's amazing. It is such a powerful thing that you can do. In addition to all of that, it also creates better eating habits. Kids who eat dinner regularly with their families, they eat more fruits and vegetables, they have lower rates of obesity, they have lower rates of eating disorder. So it's an incredibly powerful thing that families can do. And, you know, if you're a family that doesn't have dinner together at all, you don't have to go from no nights a week to seven nights a week. Every little bit helps. And you know, it's such an important, wonderful thing that you can do, and that kids actually, as much as once again, they will kick and scream, they really do value it. I've had a number of kids have said, I just wish my family would eat dinner together.
And that also that it's not a negative environment, because I have had clients that said, you know, we were forced to have family dinner and there was, you know,
my
I
dad
was criticized
was drinking,
mom and dad were fighting and it was very uncomfortable to be there. So you're saying that family dinner, it's a time when you hear each other, respect each other, honor each other. And I would would imagine a time when the kids get to see the mom and dad and their relationship.
Yes.
Can you, because that's the W, and now we've got to wrap up here. But the your W in the book is for wedded bliss, keeping the marriage strong. How important is that on raising happy, confident kids?
Well, the parents' relationship is the foundation of your child's well-being and the foundation of your family. And that is particularly hard. And I recently wrote a column, my February column for LA Family Magazine, was about how your marriage changes when you have kids. And for those who are interested in seeing it, you can go to my website at drjen.com, drjenn, and you can read that column. And my editor joked with me, and he said to me, he said, can you come up with something a little more positive to say? But having a child rocks your relationship, and it usually takes that first year. There are more divorces
right.
in that first year. The only other time there are more divorces is the first year of marriage. But that said, having children can make your relationship stronger in the long run, and I give a bunch of tips in the A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids about how to communicate, how to really listen to each other. Because, for example, oftentimes when we are having conflict with our partner or our spouse, we are so busy constructing the argument in our head about what we're going to say next that we don't actually hear them. And really something as simple as listening to what they're saying, repeating back to them, did I get this right? Is this what you're saying? And having them do the same can really make a huge difference in communication.
Yeah, I think the greatest gift you can give your children is for them to see, to witness a loving relationship.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And it is tough. I think, you know, what you're saying, your editor was saying is true. I mean, the Gottmans, we interviewed Julie and John Gottman, and they're doing
amazing.
This whole program saying that, you know, often having children is the descent into divorce. So you've got some solutions here. Dr. Jen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Jen's book is called The A to Z Guide to Raising Happy, Confident Kids, and her website is www.drjenn.com. And if you have any comments or questions or would like to be on the show, please email me at shrink@kcsn.org. And Jen's website will also be up on the KCSN website. So you can also find it there, find the link there. Join me next week while we have another great show where we'll be talking about another psychological issue. Tune in to Shrink Wrap on Tuesdays at 6:30 because it's really all about tuning into you. I'm West Hollywood psychotherapist Phyllis Chase, and I specialize in working with creatives, couples, and lead my 7-week course, Love on Purpose, which connects women to their life purpose and the power of intentional loving. You can reach me at my website, phyllischase.com, or call me at 310-402-8888. Stay tuned for Eyes of the World with Pat Baker coming up next.
Doctor, my eyes.
The views expressed on the preceding program do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of KCSN, nor those of California State University Northridge, nor the California State University system.